The most powerful use of soft power is when you're able to lead people without a single command. Through trust, influence, and perspective, everything begins to change. If you make hard power your default mode, you're going to lose a lot of battles you could have won. You're going to lose a lot of people you could have brought with you.
Could you give us a few things to help us lead with soft power?
Yeah, I mean, on a global scale, one of the things I do is...
You were listening to Mind Shift with Aaron McManus and Earl McManus. I'm Aaron. I'm here with my dad, Erwin. How are you doing this morning?
I'm doing great. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. But before we get too into it, I just want to say thank you to everyone who watches these episodes. Everyone who's tuning in each week on Fridays. I am so grateful for you guys. I just want to tell you a little bit about what you can do to maybe go deeper with us in this podcast. You can go to the YouTube channel and you can hit subscribe. You can go to the Instagram and follow. We post clips and people are commenting in the sections. We do merch giveaways. You can go to Apple Podcasts or Spotify, wherever you listen to podcasts, and rate and review this. And it means the world to us. As we keep building this catalog of episodes, it's really important for us to just know you guys are out there and engaging with us and us with you and doing all the things.
I mean, you've been sort of historically a Miami hater.
I've never liked Miami.
That you're ever a hater, not that you ever have strong opinions about anything or any plays or any people.
No, I was dying on that rock of I hate Miami.
Yeah.
You know, I'll never go back. I hate that place, you know, but I loved it. I really loved it. I was actually so surprised. And, you know, you can tell you love a place when you start Zillowing places to rent out or to buy.
Yeah, my experience is that we tend to hate places because of human experiences, and we end up loving them because of people.
Yeah.
So I'm figuring that if you love Miami, you must have really enjoyed some people down there.
I loved hanging out with the people I was hanging out with. I also feel like I'm a bit older, so I think the world I was in when I was there in the past was a little bit more chaotic, a little bit more nightlife. So just being there and waking up early and going to the ocean and jumping in and seeing friends and eating and going to sleep early, it was just like a different, it felt really relaxing to me. I know that South Beach is chaotic and chaos, but you know, growing up in LA, you don't really go to the ocean. I didn't really go to the beach until college, really. I mean, you go in the summer every once in a while, but you know, it's good to jump in this beautiful ocean in Miami and it's stunning and it's warm. And I called you and I for the first time understood why you don't like the ocean in LA.
Well, I mean, in El Salvador, the water is hot because it's warmed by volcano.
Yeah.
And volcanic activity. And then lived in Miami, and the Gulf of Mexico side is super warm, and the Atlantic is also very warm. Then I moved to LA. The Pacific is just
freezing.
It's inhumane. No, and I jumped in once. I'm like, I'm never jumping in this thing again.
No, I'm good.
And then just how incredibly polluted the beaches are out here in LA.
It was good to be over there. It was nice. It was fun. Ate at some great restaurants. Saw some friends. Saw some people that I hadn't seen in a long time. It was good to see Rich Wilkerson Jr. and Don Cherie. The day I landed, I was hoping to make it to a VU church gathering, but I landed a little bit too late and ended up going to an event some friends were doing. But I hit Rich up, and then he invited me out the next day to go play pickleball with him and, you know, Don Cherie's brothers. She has a bunch of brothers. She has so many brothers, and they're all named D, Dakota, Des. They're all, I know there's another one I'm missing, but they all have D, so I just get so confused because they also are handsome and they all look very similar. But it was really fun. They play. I don't like pickleball either. I'm kind of a hater. I realized. I 2024. Is it too late to come up with you know, some goals?
Well, maybe hate being a hater.
Hate being a hater. But I played pickleball. You know, honestly, I think I just played pickleball with you and your friends. You know, Edwin and John and Paulo and all these guys. And they're like, they all have coaches. They all work really hard at playing. And I come in and smoke everybody. Obviously, I'm elite. But it just wasn't that fun. You know, and I'm like, if I can win with almost any one of the partners, this can't be that good of a game. I don't even know the rules. Like, John Gordon had to tell me, like, oh, go stand up there or hey, come back here. But they were playing with them. They played like a different version of pickle, like, so it would move faster.
Yeah.
And I was terrified because they're hitting this ball at each other so hard. The competition was really fun. You would have enjoyed it. Yeah, it was really good. So, you know, shout out to Rich and his family for, you know, including me in their world. And Rich is one of the most convincing people I've ever met. you know, I'm there on Monday night. I'm only supposed to stay there till Tuesday or Wednesday. And he goes, just stay for VU girl. Stay for the girls conference.
So you stayed for the girl conference.
I was having such a good time. I decided to stay a couple extra days. And then Mariah flew in with a bunch of her friends. And she was singing at this conference. So I decided to go and hang out. And it was great being at a conference that wasn't for you specifically. You know, like you go to our Mosaic conference a couple weeks ago. It's busy. It's hectic. We're hugging everyone. We're shaking everyone's hands. We're trying to see as many people as we can, because I do feel very honored when people fly in to spend. They spend money with us. They spend their time with us. They leave their families. They come hang out for a weekend. It's a big deal, I think. But going to someone else's conference was really nice. So no one wants to talk to me. No one's trying to say hi.
Well, I mean, I think the way you would say it, it's a little sus when a single guy goes to a girl's
conference.
That's
what I said. I was like, Rich, no, I'm not going. He's like, I have to go. I was like, yeah, but you're married to the woman who's doing it. She's like, but you just come.
Yeah, but then your sister was also singing and speaking. So
I sang and I didn't sing. I sat in a row with my five other moms that I hung out with, you know.
There you go.
But it was fun.
But I know that while you were there, you guys had a lot of leadership conversations.
Great conversations. Honestly, I think Rich is one of the most strategic masterminds that we have out there. Rich Wilkerson Jr. is a strategic mastermind.
Yeah, and for those who are listening who are not familiar, Rich Wilkerson and DC started a church called VU.
Yes.
In Miami, and that thing has just erupted. Maybe 8,000 people attending.
Yeah.
And it's just an incredible work. And Rich and DC are both very gifted communicators. But I think one of the things that people may not realize is what a brilliant, insightful leader Rich is, and really captures a lot of the concrete and the nuances of leadership, which is really interesting. So what are some things that stood out to you? Maybe just give us some leadership highlights.
How random is this, right? They had they have, you know, a Bible college that's connected to their church called VU College, I think. And he was speaking there at 10 in the morning. And so I hadn't heard him speak, and I didn't think I was going to stay for the conference. So he's like, hey, just come hear me speak tomorrow. You want to come? And I was like, yeah, sure, I'll come. 10 a.m. or something. So I grab my suitcase and bring it over to the conference, or to the little like one day. And there's probably like 60 people. And it was all these young kids coming in to do like a year of college before they go off to university and all these things. And you know, I walked into their beautiful building they had in the design district, and it was just cool to hear them, one, to be excited about something they're building, but two, to hear a guy speak to 50 people. You know, like, he's speaking to arenas. Why would he doesn't need to do that. But I always find it really impressive and really honoring to just the craft when someone goes, you know what, like, this is what I'm building. Like, I don't care if it's 50, I don't care if it's 5,000. I'm going to still bring something to it. And he talked a bit about indecision is a decision. And, you know, and I thought it was a great message to young guys men and women who are trying to make a decision on what they're going to do for a year of their life. You know, are they going to go serve the church? Are they going to go to university or XYZ? But he talked about the two concepts, or this concept about soft power and hard power, but the way you communicate and the way you listen and the way that, you know, you're influenced by the rest of the world. Hard power being military action, someone physically removing or doing something to affect you, and soft power being this idea of like mass media, commercialization, being influenced by influencers, the people around you, a little bit more subtle. And I called you afterwards and thought that that would be such a great topic. I think it would be a cool topic for the arena, is the thing I had brought it up for, our obviously our online community and our conference and our summits that we do monthly. Shout out to the arena and all the guys, that, men and women who listen and are part of that whole community. But I do think it's really fascinating, right? Because I think, you know, we've been developing something. I say we, but, you know, you created content around the seven frequencies of communication.
That's right.
And one of my primary frequencies, because we created this test quiz around it that, you know, we're going to release to the world.
Assessment.
We're releasing to the world soon. And I'm a commander.
Yes.
And so, you know, and I am often told, don't command me. You know, but I operate very much like my mother, you know, and a lot of moms out there. Shout out to the moms who got to tell your kids what to do. And I direct. I'm very commanding. You know, I don't say, you know, I flew in and I went to go see my niece at your house. And then you're like, oh, let's cook up a steak. And you started cooking. And I said, turn off the light.
Yes.
In my mind, I said, my best friend, my father, my mentor, my pastor, please, will you delicately touch that switch and flip it downwards? And you looked at me and said, don't command me. And my response was,
actually, I said, stop commanding me.
I said, stop commanding
me. Because it was not the first command of the night. And I usually just recontextualize everything you say by telling myself he's actually just asking.
Yeah, but I've really got to learn. I've got to learn that, you know.
Well, it is one of the differences between hard power and soft power. Even in the nuance of the seven frequencies, if it's a test, that's hard power. If it's an assessment, it's soft power. All the language that is command-oriented, dictatorial, or authoritarian falls in the category of hard power. And so...
To all the commanders out there, all the challengers out there, it's hard power.
Yeah, military is hard power. You know, companies where you have CEOs and middle managers and it's just purely hierarchical, that's hard power. You have a boss, you do what you're told. Parenting is usually hard power because I told you so.
Yeah.
But great parents understand soft power. And the nuance of asking your children questions until they make the right decision. You know,
that's really interesting because you're doing a podcast later with our good friend Haven Weitz, who has a great podcast called Haven. If you haven't checked it out, you should check it out. You're about to be on it. I think
I am.
She batch records, so I know that it'll come out in the next, I'm sure, a few weeks or month. But she actually texted me while I was in Miami and said, I'm listening to your last podcast. And I have her daughter, Isley, is in the backseat. And Isley goes, Mom, these two people are trying to understand something. And it was so sweet. And she sent like a long, you know, and me and Haven will chop it up. Uh-huh. Her and her husband are some dear friends of ours I've known since high school. But I'll ask her a lot about her podcast. She'll ask about ours. And I sent her a voice memo back to Isley. And I was like, hey, Isley, I hope you're doing well. You know, thanks for listening to our podcast. I really appreciate it. You're the best. You have the best mom and dad. They're so cool. And she sent me a little photo of Isley in the back smiling, listening to the voice memo. So
that's awesome.
It was cool. It was fun.
But soft power is about relationships. It's about influence. It's about trust. It's really the difference between a person who uses power that has been, in a sense, delegated to them or maybe given to them organizationally or positionally, and a person who hasn't been given power, hasn't been delegated power, but they still are able to influence the room. And that's what's so interesting sometimes, watching a room. The person in charge is quite often not the person in charge because all they have is hard power and people don't really respond anymore to hard power very well. And so if you are a hard power leaning person, you're born in the wrong decade or maybe century. And because hard power worked really well even 50 years ago. But now,
can you list a couple modern day hard power communicators?
Donald Trump.
Can you list a couple other ones? So that I'm not grouped alone with an orange man. I know this is controversial. Oh. I kind of like Donald Trump. I don't like the racist stuff. I don't like the sexist stuff. There's some stuff, right? But I don't mind him as a character. I think he's an interesting character.
Yeah. Ironically, Biden is hard power as well.
Interesting. Can you break that down?
Yeah, whenever he has something he wants done that doesn't pass Congress or the Senate or even the Supreme Court, he uses
his presidential
executive privilege.
Yeah, executive privilege.
And you know, even just the hard power is even when you look at the loan forgiveness for college students.
Right.
Even when it was dictated as illegal, he found another way. And he even says,
it was ruled illegal by what, Supreme Court Justice
what he
Congress?
Did. For example, with even like the college loan forgiveness program, the first time President Biden tried to do it, it didn't work out. And in fact, the real questions were, does he even have the legal right to do that? Can you forgive loans without the Senate? And can you forgive loans without the Supreme Court?
Yeah, yeah.
And he actually even says, hey, I'm going to find a way to do this no matter what. That's hard power. Hard power is I have authority, I'm in power, I'm in control, and I'm going to do what I want to do. And soft power is cultural influence. And I'm trying to think, people like Dr. Phil use hard power.
Okay.
You can feel it.
Okay.
They tell you what to do. They tell you if you disagree, you're wrong.
Right.
You know, they may even tell you you're stupid if you do it differently. It's a very strong hard power. And soft power would be the way you know, way a lot of artists like shape culture, and you don't even realize they're shaping culture. And but they're using storytelling to change your view of reality. They're using in some sense almost like emotional, even sometimes manipulation, to cause you to connect a positive feeling with a belief system you didn't used to hold. And so all of a sudden you go, oh yeah, that's not so bad.
The turtles and the straw. The straw, yeah, and the turtle.
That's a perfect example.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, did that turtle really have a straw in its nose, or was it put there?
By PETA. I'm not sure.
But yes, you photograph that and you're using soft power, using influence.
And you change all the straw laws.
Yeah. And now I'm hearing that it's worse now with the new straws.
The new plastic straws. And yeah, there's always, it seems like there's always a new bad thing to be avoided.
It's plastic and paper. Now they're just asking you, do you want plastic or paper? You're not even sure which one is the ethical decision.
Yeah, I'm not even sure.
Except bring your own bag, right?
Yeah, because now they're saying that even inside of like coffee cups, the glue that's used to like seal the coffee cup that oftentimes melts and kind of falls apart is like released into your coffee. Have you heard about this, Austin? Yeah, there's some people that are like posting about it on pods and stuff like that, that like, no, this is actually a deadly carcinogen that over time will build inside your system and then end up becoming. But I feel like that's everything on this earth is just trying to kill us, you know?
You know, ironically, I want to go back, and this would be a great conversation, because my first response to you was Donald Trump about hard power.
Yeah.
But I think what made him dangerous was soft power.
How so?
Because he's the first president to really use Twitter to his advantage, you know? And Twitter is soft power. Twitter isn't hard power. You can't tell people what to do.
Yeah.
You don't really control people. But he used soft power, influence, to gain a massive allegiance and create a movement of people who elected him president. And
wasn't he banned on Twitter for a little bit?
Yeah, he was.
He was banned, and then Elon brought him back, right?
Yeah.
So it's interesting that an app that is dedicated to this idea of soft power and community influence and dialogue, discussion, and posting, actually used hard power to remove Donald's influence on a large portion of America.
They saw the danger of his soft power.
Interesting.
I mean, think about TikTok. You know, here I'm finally in TikTok, you know.
They're talking about banning
at 65, and now they're going to ban it. I go, man, the moment I jump in, they're going to talk about banning it. I mean, I thought, this is amazing. Our government is afraid that China will influence American culture more by the soft power created in TikTok than by the laws and policies we can create as a government.
It's really interesting, right?
It's really fascinating.
Because you look at the history of the US, yeah. we are either beloved or hated around the world, but they know us, right? They know our culture, they know Michael Jordan, they know Kobe Bryant, they know Sprite, they know McDonald's. Like, you have these really soft power mobilization tools, like these tools of culture, right? They know you too.
Yeah.
They know, I don't even know. They know NSYNC. Like, you just have all of these. They know the rap music. They know the Kanye West. Like, they have this influence. We have this influence globally. We're people. You can't, you know, obviously we're a free country. We have so many rights. They're so much more unique, you know, and we're privileged and so different than the rest of the world. But we have this culture, right? Like, how many times do we go internationally and people are like, my favorite show is The O.C.? Like, what do you mean? Like, I don't even go to OC on purpose. Like, but there's like this falling in love of, you know, the Beverly Hills sign. And there's always thousands of tourists, you know, that are taking photos of Beverly Hills and like the Hollywood land and the Hollywood sign. And you get all of these kind of like soft power moments throughout culture that kind of influence people to want to be more attracted to what we're doing. Or it causes disruption and, you know, and people tend to hate us. So, yeah, I always think it's fascinating.
Yeah, the most powerful use of soft power is when you're able to lead people without a single command, and through trust, influence, and perspective, everything begins to change. And so then, you know, you're able to help people see reality in a new way and move toward a common decision together. It's a really powerful thing, and I've always found it to be one of the most intriguing skills to learn. Like, early on in my life, I decided that I would choose a soft power route rather than a hard power. It's why for decades I wouldn't let anybody call me pastor. It's why I never would use a title here. And it's why I basically stripped everything of any hard power imagery. I took church off the name. I, you know, took pastor off the name. I took, you know, boss off. And I just told myself, I want to lead through soft power because that's really trust. And I think that's the way to think about it. It's like, how do you earn trust where someone wants to hear what you have to say, wants to see things from your perspective, and even is so attracted to your value system that they want to carry that value system with them as they go forward. And, you know, so it could be turn off the light, which is what, you know, you said, or it could be, hey, do you think it's too bright in here? you know, there's different ways of leading, or another one could be a more moral approach of, we should probably save on electricity. but the problem is that you're not patient enough for the journey of soft power.
No. And even someone dear to me said, they said, I don't do well with commands. And I started laughing and was like, we're going to struggle. But just, you know, add please at the end of everything with a question mark and remove my period, you know, and we'll be good to go.
Well, when you have two people with command, then it becomes even more challenging.
Like, how much does my conversations with mom stress you out?
Oh, I can't take it. I just want to leave the room.
You literally left the room.
Yeah. I tap out.
I started laughing when you left because we're like, this is just how we communicate. We're just barking at each other.
It's just like, man, I'm, you know, if I wanted to stand on the edge of Gaza, you know, and because that's like you and your mom. And I'm like, I can't do it. And what you have to realize sometimes though, is that if you make hard power your default mode, you're going to lose a lot of battles you could have won. And you're going to lose a lot of people you could have brought with you. And so I do think learning the elegance of soft power is a high level leadership competency.
How would you lead through soft power now?
I think it's what I do.
No, I know. Yeah. But could you give us a few things to help us lead with soft power?
Yeah, I mean, on a global scale, one of the things I do is by creating a place like Mosaic, I lead through soft power. I know that I have no interest in being in charge of a denomination or interested in, you know, in having any kind of a actual positional authority over the church and across the world. So I created a community of faith that I was convinced is what the church should look like for the future. And through creating this community in one of the hardest places to have a church in the world, and I purposely chose the spot, and so that then its influence affects churches all over the world. There are tens of thousands of churches across the world that exist as a reflection of Mosaic and the influence of Mosaic that I never walked into and I never told them what to do. And that is the result of soft power.
So do you think though at some point, because when I came back 10 years ago and really started working with you, I brought in hard power, you know? I did. Because I was talking to Brooke Odom Figueroa, who was, you know, she was on this podcast for a long time and we love her when it was a part of Battle Ready. And she was saying that our conversation a couple weeks ago at the Mosaic conference that's on YouTube, you know, that was like Paul Atreides and what's the dad's name? Paul. Lado Atreides. He basically, it was like, you know, the moment in Dune 1 where he's like, it doesn't matter what you do. You'll always be my son.
Yeah.
And it was one of those things. But when I came back, I definitely was, you know, hard power, you know. But I had also, that's what I had experienced in the system that I was in over there in New York. And it wasn't all hard power, but there was a lot of hard power, you know. And I think there, I can see both. I can see the effectiveness of soft power, of like the influence and the spending time with people and really getting to know people. And I think that was what we did well in Venice. We really spent a lot of time with each other. We were a great team off the court, so that when we were on the court and it was game time, people just knew. You could be like, hey, can you do this? Or do this, please. And there's no, they the character and the relationship adds the can you and please question mark at the end, right? And we talked a lot about it. We're like, we're a football team on Sundays.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I think that's really important because hard power is more efficient, and but not always more effective. And soft power tends to transform essence. And so you may not be as efficient because people aren't doing exactly what you need them to do in this moment. But it does develop a transformational essence where people start thinking the way you think, seeing the way you see, and moving in the direction that you need them to move. And so that's a part of the dynamic. And so I don't think it's ever one without the other. I think when you have great soft power, you are allowed to use hard power when it's necessary. But if you only use hard power, ironically, when you use soft power, people will ignore you because they don't think you're taking it seriously because they're used to the hard power rhythm. And then you have massive turnover because people only can take that for so long.
Hard or soft?
Hard.
I do think with soft too, because I do, to some degree, there's something that keeps me when there's hard power, you know, because I mean,
yes,
if you're telling
people are structured differently.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like being told what to do. I may not do it, but I'd prefer you tell me exactly what you want versus me having to wonder what you want, you know? And that's why we work well together, because I oftentimes translate the soft into hard, the medium.
Yeah. But
you would leave meetings and, you know, we would kick you out of meetings at the end. I'd go, okay, it's time for, you know, time for you to go. And you'd be done. And oftentimes it was out of natural, you being busy. So you go to the next call and I'd sit with the rest of the team and go, okay, this is what he was telling you to do by asking you, you know, and by suggesting, because you would kind of go, you know, what if we did this? And I would just change the beginning and the end. We're going to do this. This is what we're going to do.
Yes.
You know, and then we would leave the meeting and go, all right.
Yeah, there are times where both are necessary, you know, and but if you're going to build a long-term culture, you want to make sure that you're dominantly using soft power to lead.
So building a culture that you've built with Mosaic and the companies that you've obviously run, and I've been a part of a few of them, and they've all been really amazing places to work. I've worked at other places. I have. I think some people think I haven't. And no, I have. And there's a reason why I come and work for you. I do think that, well, one, now I'm just in too deep. So is Austin. He can't admit it, but there ain't nowhere he can go now. But having worked for you, how did you build a culture based off soft power that was also effective? Because, you know, pre-COVID, we were one of the larger churches on the West Coast, right? And how did you do it? How did you figure out how to create a culture where kindness and influence and relevancy to culture was the primary drivers versus, you know, you go to a lot of places, a lot of businesses, it's grow. Grow, grow. Like one thing we almost never talk about bottom line. We almost never talk about how much people are giving. It's very rare, right? It's, you know what I mean? Like you're very much so about creating the best product, creating the best message, creating the best experience, and then it will come.
So that's true. I think one is that you have to genuinely believe that other people have a beautiful contribution to make. And that if all they're doing is executing your commands, you're never extracting out of them their real genius and their real greatness, their real contribution. And so even when I tell people, you know, hey, you need to do this or need to do this, I always leave tremendous room for a person to fill the empty spaces in between.
So talk about that, because I feel that I find that I would get very lost in that. That, and I think some people really do, right? Because when you don't know exactly what you're supposed to do, you tend to get lost trying to figure out what it is you are supposed to do.
That's true. And that's one of the downsides of the way that I lead. And because it's odd if, I think Mariah and you sometimes have a conversation with me going, we need a different spectrum of tight control, loose control. I think 99.9% of people would see me as incredibly loose control.
Yeah.
And they might feel like they're floating out in space because they don't know exactly what they need to do to succeed.
Right.
And so that's where I think the like hard leadership is really important. And in fact, one of the things I told the team earlier is because we had an intern that we had to decide to let go or not let go. And he really made some terrible mistakes. But then I called the team back up and I said, did you ever walk these people through what was expected in this area? No. Did you ever clarify with him how he should behave in certain environments? No. And I said, he's an intern. and you're assuming he knows things that you never taught him. And so you can't put this on the intern. This is actually a leadership failure.
Yeah. Also, he didn't make a terrible mistake. He made some tactical mistakes. Yeah, it wasn't moral or
no terrible mistakes.
Yeah. But it was just like something. If you've been around more,
long and
for a longer period of time, you would know. Oh, we don't do that.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh no, those are the kind of mistakes that actually are more dangerous. They're not moral mistakes. They're cultural mistakes.
Right. Right. Right.
And when you're in a culture, you expect everyone knows your culture.
Yes.
And I had to step back and go, hey guys, our culture is different than almost any other culture someone will come from. So if you expect them just to intuitively know our cultural values, you're expecting the unreasonable. And that's why I wrote An Unstoppable Force, was all the rules people give you are not the ones that matter. The rules people give you are the ones that don't matter. It's the rules they don't give you that matter because they think they're obvious. and you know, if you go in certain cultures, they'll never tell you, never cross your legs and put the sole of your foot up, because that's an incredible insult to the person you're talking to. And it's like a derogatory act. They won't tell you that because they'll assume everyone knows that. And so what you have to pay attention to is the ethos, the cultural values that are unspoken. And sometimes it's like running through a minefield blindfolded, and you only know you've taken the wrong step when you blow up. And that's, I think that's the danger of soft power sometimes, is that everything is done in such a nuance that a new person doesn't know why everyone's doing what they're doing. At least with hard power, you know exactly what the rules are, you know exactly what the boundaries are, and you know exactly what's expected.
Do you think that hard power tethers us? Use the analogy of us floating off into space. And I think Sandra Bullock in Gravity, right? And I think, you know, I do, I think.
Her best movie.
Right. Oh, no, I mean, she's wonderful. Miss Congeniality is her best movie. Are you kidding me? That's a top five for me. Top five.
I can't even believe you admitted you like that movie.
Who was the guy in that? I can't remember.
Does it matter?
No, but
Ryan Reynolds?
No, she did a different one with Ryan Reynolds.
Oh yeah.
Who was that? Michael Caine? Benjamin Bratt. Was he like the love interest? Oh, anyways, it doesn't matter. But no, I was thinking about this space metaphor we're talking, or is it a metaphor or an analogy?
I'm not sure.
I get really confused about those two things sometimes. So, okay, you're talking about being lost in space, and I'm thinking you're tethered to whatever it is that's keeping you, you know, from floating off into space. Is hard power the tethering, or is that some kind of like fusion in between going, it's not necessarily saying you can't leave, but this is the parameters in which you can go and do something at your own pace. Is hard power the tether that keeps us from floating off into space?
I think it's a great metaphor. I think it's really important to use hard power when it's essential. But I think hard power should be the 10%, not the 90%. And, you know, even when you're parenting, you do have to use hard power sometimes, you know, because you don't want your kid running across the street. You go, no, you do not go across the street. And even if they don't understand the philosophical reasons why, you know, why they're limited to the boundaries of this side of the street, and they're looking and they don't see a car right now. So they don't even see the potential danger to come.
Right.
And sometimes you have to use hard power to protect people and to bring clarity and to bring continuity in an organization. But that to me is like, it's the skeleton, it's not the body. And when hard power becomes the body, there's no flesh, there's no warmth, there's no life to it.
Now, one of my favorite things that you've ever written is the core values for Mosaic. And we have these core values, and one of them talks about structure submitting to spirit. And a lot of people I find mess that one up. And, you know, and I really refer to it more as someone building an altar, and the altar is the structure and the spirit brings the fire.
That's right? The metaphor in the book.
In the PDF that I have of our core values, it's not the verse that's correlated to it.
No, but in the conversations about it, I talked about how The wood is the structure, but it's always consumed.
Is this in a
It's an unstoppable force.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. So, I love that idea. Right? Is that so? Is structure hard power?
It can be. Yeah. Because it creates non-negotiables.
Okay.
But yeah, when people hear structure must mean the spirit, what they hear is, oh, we don't have to have any structure. And yes. You're not jellyfish.
Yeah.
No, it means that there will always be structure.
Yeah.
If you have a healthy organization. But you cannot hold on to past structures when you have new challenges and new expressions. And so the structure has to change based on what's happening in the world. I think the best maybe imagery for that would be if you're still using a landline as a telephone,
right?
You have not adjusted to the new emerging realities. And a lot of churches, because when I wrote that, I was writing dominantly to the church.
Right.
They think the landline is the spiritual. And, you know, and they're never going to go to a flip phone and then to an iPhone and then, you know, and no, the structure keeps changing because the goal is communication. As you have to realize that the overarching value to connect and communicate, that hasn't changed. We're just getting better and better and better at it. So the structure has to change. Yeah. And frankly, I think there's a lot of people in the world, the way that they live structurally, they're so confused because there's no more phone booths and they're still looking for a phone booth. And you know, just to be funny, you know, Superman always had to have a phone booth because that's where he changed into his Superman outfit. And, you know, I mean, basically once we got rid of phone booths, Superman would cease to exist for a lot of organizations. Well, we can't have Superman. There's no more phone booth. You solve the structural problem once the world changes. And that's, you know, and that's really what happened even during the pandemic and during the quarantine is you had to change your structures. We couldn't meet live. I mean, I know some states met the whole time virtually, but we were out for about a year and a half. And we're either going to cease to exist or our structures had to change and adapt to the world we were in and connect to people and fulfill our mission. And now that, you know, we're back, we're readapting those structures again. And if you don't learn how to be adaptive, the spirit part, your structures will actually sink you.
Well, this is a great conversation. I think this is a great conversation. And honestly, like, these are things that I'm very interested in because I obviously struggle with soft power.
So I'm going to ask you a question before we tap out.
No, I thought I was ending this thing.
No, you're going to end
it. This joint's got to be done.
But since we're in a conversation about soft power, hard power.
Yes, sir.
What have you heard in this conversation where you would say, these are the changes I'm going to make. This is the way I'm going to apply these principles to my life, my leadership.
How would I adapt this into my own life and leadership?
Yes, but I didn't mean hypothetically. I mean, in actual
reality. No. I mean, I think listening, asking what other people think more often, giving room for other people and their ideas. Maybe being less authoritarian, but I like it. Because I also like when Austin's like that back. Hey, no, do this. Don't do this. I don't, you know, I get mad at Austin when I know he's not paying attention because he's like, yeah, that's cool. Yeah. Like we're on the phone the other day and I was like, I know he was working on the website. But he's just giving, oh yeah, that's good. And I was like, brother, stop saying yes. I know all my ideas aren't right. Like, give me something else, right? You know what I'm talking about.
So if I can convince you that there's a faster way to your end game than command, would you choose the slower way or the faster way?
Would I choose the slower way or the faster way? It depends on the situation and what I'm trying to get accomplished.
No, because the reason you use hard power and command
right.
is because you're trying to get to the outcome as fast as you can.
Yes. I think I oftentimes look back at the day before or the moment before, oftentimes leaving your house and my interactions with mom, and I go, man, I really got to just change and shut my mouth and stop. So I think a lot of it is patience, is activating with patience, right? I think to soften my hard power is one, seeing the value in soft power, going, okay, how do I, if I know how to lead if I tell people what to do. How can I lead by influence? How can I lead by relationship? How can we be synergistic by not saying, this is exactly what I want you to do, or telling you what to do, going, this is the outcome I want. This is the vision. This is the goal. Now let's work it backwards. And how to help everyone be on the same page? How do I really be the person that's supporting them to some degree, versus I'm going to carry all the weight. I'm going to share the burden, and I'm going to like move forward at the pace of the slowest person versus the fastest person.
Two things really important to remember. Using soft power doesn't make you soft.
Right.
And
it makes you influential.
Yeah. And hard power isn't always the fastest way. Have you seen that, that I think that physics experiment where they have three ropes and then three balls and they drop them to see which one gets to the end fastest? One has a straight line. One has a slightly angled line, and the third one has a deep drop. And they drop all three balls at the same time to see which one we get to the end fastest.
Look at me.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so you think that the ones in the straight line would get there fastest, but it's actually the second one, the one that has a slight drop and then straightens, because the momentum accelerates the ball. So even though it's traveling further, it gets there faster. That's the power of soft power. See, hard power is a straight line, trying to get there as fast as possible. But you're not getting the advantage of the momentum of agreement. And so if you take a little bit of time using soft power to gain agreement, then you actually move faster than the person who just goes in the straight line.
I have funny things I want to say, but I'm gonna hold it off and be serious. I am not convinced, but I have been influenced.
But are you intrigued?
I'm intrigued. Because here it is. I think learning how to lead in multiple different facets with different tools for different scenarios is actually one of the hardest things. I know the situations I'm really good at. You know, my least favorite thing in the world is ask for my help and then don't listen. Because I didn't need to have that conversation with you. I don't want to be on your council of five. Right. Like, you know, like I have no interest in that. Like, you got it, you know? But if you ask my advice, like, do it, try it. And then if it fails, oh, it's on me. You know, I don't know. That's how I feel. So,
I have so much to say, but I'm going to let it go.
No. Tell me. This is fun. This is good.
Now, you don't know how many times I've talked to high-end leaders with command who say, they asked for my advice and they didn't take it. And I would respond, do you believe a person only takes your advice when they do what you tell them? And they would say, of course.
No, I think.
No, the way you see it, whether a person.
I see the same way. No, I absolutely
do. If they respect your advice, they're going to take it rather than wade in with everything else they're
processing. I mean, it happened on Sunday with David Arcos. I was like, why the heck you waste my time while I'm in Miami asking me all these questions if you're not going to do what I said? But I do get what you're saying, right? And there's got to be some room. Because I guess when I ask for help, I ask early on in the process sometimes, but it's usually going, can you see something I don't?
Right. Do you know how many times you ask me for advice?
Hear that. It's usually me asking, going, can you see something I don't?
Right.
So I want to listen to the person. So I don't understand when people go, like, give me your, you know, I don't know. I guess I ask waiters, like, what do you recommend? And then they say stuff, and I'm like, I'm not ordering that. You know?
Yeah. But
soft power doesn't work on me, I don't think. I don't think it does.
You've asked me for advice so many times and completely did the opposite of what I said.
Yeah. I'm just an idiot, I think. I'm just foolish.
No, but I just know that when a person's asking for advice, the input isn't what helps them. It's the new perspective. And so if you can't help a person see it a new way, they're going to go back to their previous decision.
Okay.
And that's where it's really frustrating, because you're going, can't you see what I see? And the answer is actually no. They can't see what you see, and that's why your answer doesn't feel right. And so I've realized over time that more than telling a person what to do, I have to help them see a new way. And because the reason you see that decision is because you see something very, very different. Different factors.
Yeah.
And so that's part of the challenge of working with human beings, you know, and
but there's something there that you're very good at, right? Because you're, I mean, there's something there. There's a lot of things there that you're very good at, but you're really good at materializing the ethereal, right? I can feel why something doesn't work. I can't always explain to you why I don't think this will work.
Yeah.
Right? And so, and that is like the connecting point, the tether, right? Between the hard and the soft of how do I help you understand the thing that I see, you know, and then for it to actually care, to make you care about it. It's a skill and a gift, right?
Yeah. And I think that sometimes the best you can do is, if it were me, this is what I would choose. You know, and they go, why? You go, this is what I see. And some of it is just my gut. You know, I've been here 100 times before and my gut tells me this, you know? And I had this conversation this morning, you know, where I, with your mom, I wasn't going to say completely,
we'll
but
beep it out. Yeah. I'd be like with beep.
Where, you know, things went bad exactly as I told her they would. And then she said, I'm going to listen to you from now on. And I go, you're not.
That was what we got in a fight about in the kitchen the other night. I said, you need to listen.
I said, you're not going to listen to me because you said that to me a million times.
Yeah.
But you have to decide that you're going to see things differently.
Well, I don't want to be that. I love my mother. I don't want to be that, though. I want to listen. I do want to listen.
It's just that if you keep cycling back to the same crisis or the same circumstance or the same situation, you have to be willing to take new input because it means you're seeing things the same way and missing the same things every time. And I don't mean you, I'm just saying in general, all of us who are listening. And that's the thing that strikes me is that that's when I become more teachable when I realize this is the third time that I've been here. And I pull back and I go, all right, that means I'm still seeing the wrong thing or blinding myself to something that's obvious that I don't want to see. And that's when I actually begin to change. And so remember, when most people are asking for advice, I do ask them, have you asked other people for advice already? And they will almost always say yes. You know, say how many people? And then they'll go 3 or 4. And what did they say? All of them said the same thing. And then I will say, you're just looking for someone that'll tell you what you want to hear. Because people have already given you very clear advice and it's been the same advice every time. So if I give you the same advice, you'll reject it again and go look for someone else. So you're not looking for advice, you're looking for agreement.
Ah, there's a whole podcast in there, that, right? No, and I think, yeah. Yeah, no, you're right. You're so right.
And maybe that's a good place for us to leave it off. Are you looking for advice?
Are you looking for agreement?
Yeah.
Can you break down what the difference is between looking for advice and looking for agreement?
You can know you're looking for advice when you ask someone who's already been there for their wisdom or someone whose life or person you want to be like. You're looking for agreement when you keep asking people who know just as little as you and you keep asking one more person and one more person and one more person until you find the person who tells you what you want to hear. And that's the difference. When you're looking for advice, you're looking for someone who has more experience than you to help you see what you can't see. When you're looking for agreement, you're usually asking your peers or people who have less success in that arena so that you can convince them that your position is the right one.
I love it. Well, let's close this out, yeah?
All right.
Okay, so a few things. If you are watching this episode, thank you so much. We're so grateful for every single person who tunes in each week to Mind Shift. We've been so much better about it being every Friday, which I really love.
That's amazing.
But you can subscribe, you can rate, you can review. So go to Apple Podcasts, leave a review and rate this podcast 5 stars or get out. Spotify, you can give us 5 stars. And YouTube, that's okay, hard
now,
power
now
right
do that
there.
Without
that was hard power. You, could you please give us 5 stars on all the things. And if you don't, I'm going to come for you. No, I'm just kidding.
5 stars help us because it helps us
it gets
spread the message out to the world.
Yes. Yes. So thank you so much. And everyone, are you going to look at that? Do you ever look at the YouTube comments?
I don't.
Yeah, they're really funny, actually. They're good. And thank you for everyone who comments on YouTube. Subscribe to the YouTube channel as well. I'm very, very excited for the next few episodes of this and getting to dive in deeper. And so as we get into Easter, as we approach Easter and all the things that we're doing, the Arena Conference coming up in October, I'm very excited. Thank you guys so much. We'll see you next week.
All right. See you next week.